And I have to be careful even saying this out loud because I know it hasn't been everyone's experience, but maybe starting on StreetSense, I've been training my whole life for this past year. So I would actually say I've been more creative out of necessity than I have in my whole life. Like Jeremy Taggart and I have this podcast, as I mentioned, and we got to put a record out. You know, we have 2 weeks and $2,000 or whatever it is. I'm used to making that work. So I've had to literally duct tape my iPad to a ladder to shoot myself in a music video for a single, like just finding ways to get it done.
Writer, performer, creator, podcast host, nicest guy in showbiz. The multi-talented Jonathan Torrance has been on Canadian television and film screen since he was a teenager starring in StreetSense. He'll drop by the show from Truro to talk about the trials and tribulations of being an actor in this country, his new show, Volleys, and the project he's created to help support the wellness of workers in the Canadian entertainment sector. I'm Tara Thorne, and this is The Tideline. Good day. We have made it to June. If you know me at all, you know this is my most hated season, so expect to hear complaints. Mayor of Easttown. Blew my head off. What a show. What a show. If you've seen it and you want to talk about it, please tweet me at ThornyHFX. In the meantime, I want to play you a song from a recent release by a band I like a lot called Fungus. From their new album, Sanguine, this is called A Thing in Common.
Thank you.
Jonathan Torrance, coming in from Colchester County, correct?
Yes, indeed.
You know, I'm from East Hants, so Colchester County is my natural enemy.
What does that mean in like high school sports?
Yeah, just culturally? Like CEC was like, yeah, like CEC thinks they're better than everyone.
Interesting. I haven't experienced that because I moved to Truro later in life because my wife is
you're
from
PEI.
Here and grew up here. I'm from PEI, yeah. So I didn't really have any reference for Truro. I knew Masstown Market, of course, which is a place that you stop in for pan rolls, but I didn't really have any reference. So a couple of things about Truro. One is I've lived here 12 years now, and I still don't know which way is faster to get around town. As a friend said, it's the only place I know with 100-hectare park that you can find some of the time. But the other thing is all the, like, we don't talk to them or there's a rivalry between us and them. Like, I don't really have any frame of reference for any of it.
That's fair. I've spent a lot of time in Truro because there've been a bunch of Nova Scotia Music Weeks there, and it is there again this year. God willing.
I would like
quarantine
to think,
Jesus willing.
Yeah, exactly. It's having a moment. We have more, different kinds of restaurants now in the time that I've been here. The face of the town is changing. Was just noticing today we were out for a drive because what else are you going to do? And there are a lot of sold signs on houses. Like it's having a little boom. Truro's having
You know how they lied and said Philadelphia is the sixth borough of New York? Do you think they're trying to make Truro like part of HRM?
Well, the most wishful thinking I've ever heard was my wife told me that they were trying to call the power center, which is on top of the hill outside of Truro. There's a gas station there and kind of a rotating number of businesses. They were trying to call it the Greater Halifax Moncton Power Center. And it's over an hour in each direction. I think that's a little misleading, but I'm also sort of, I admire the optimism.
For sure.
East Hants. Like, where would you say you grew up then? Do you tell people you grew up in Halifax?
I should, but no, I want people to like feel bad for me before we start talking. So I say I grew up in Lance, which is out by the airport.
Lance is a boom town.
It is now, but then it was just, my end of it was the pile of shit end. I grew up in a really cool house, but just a bad rural town. And I have
the
opposite
side of the tracks.
Yeah, I just have no nostalgia or romanticism for it. So it's interesting to me when people like buy houses in East Hants, I go, like, you really wanted a house if that's where you ended up.
Right. They buy it for proximity to Halifax. They don't buy it for the natural vibe and buzz.
No, they don't. Yeah. Hants. My parents both worked in Burnside. So, it was like, 25, 30 minutes. So it made sense. But like, there's never been a movie theater. There's only been a independent cafe in the last, 5 years, Cup of Soul in Elmsdale.
Yeah, it's great. The cinnamon buns are outrageous. And they let you lay a thick veneer of frosting on it yourself. It's the little pleasures in life.
So speaking of which, you and I first podcasted in 2018 with a show that I had with Jacob Boone called 25 for 25. And when we came up with that idea, the really only idea I had for it was I want to do a Street Sense reunion. And I'll tell you, we had people on that show who were our friends. We had who forgot or were like, I'm really busy. Or I'm in Pearson. I forgot that we were going to do this. We had people not show up. The two easiest things to book were Steve Murphy and the Street Sense reunion. You sent one email and everyone signed right up.
I know, but that's because you're on a very short list of people that I know better than to say no to.
This is why we're here today.
Yeah, you wield a lot of power in this town.
I don't think that's true.
East Hants to downtown Halifax. Sure it is.
I wish money came with power. This has not been my experience.
Right, not yet.
So far.
Yeah. But at the same time, I always have enjoyed our conversations or fleeting interactions. And, it's really nice to do this with you. And I really enjoy, for what it's worth, the fact that there's no video element to this because I have a podcast myself, and I found when we tried to do a video element, I spent all my energy on trying to appear engaged as opposed to thinking about what the person is saying and trying to figure out how I'm going to respond. So I kind of like the intimacy of just audio.
Yeah, it's Zoom is exhausting. And it's super bizarre that we've been in this life now for a year and a half. So you know, when you book a phone call with someone you haven't met, or like my intention is a phone call, and they go audio or video. And I go, I'm never going to choose video.
Right.
If I don't have to.
I'm absolutely the same. And it's not unlike doing Streeters. I'm sure you've done that over the years where you're flagging people down in Spring Garden Road and asking them questions on camera. And the amount of energy that goes into the nonverbal exchange, the reassurance of, yeah, you're doing good. I'm listening. Everything you're doing is great. Like, you're not using words to convey that. You're using smiling and nodding. My friend Dave Chisholm, Ratty Dave, who lives in Dartmouth, used to work at Swiss Chalet. And when they were training them, they would say, when you're offering someone dessert, nod while you're saying, would you like some pecan pie? So that the person magically finds themselves saying, you know, I would, because they're drawn in by you smiling and nodding while you're saying it. And it's kind of the same doing Streeters and on Zoom. You're just trying to put out so much energy to make everyone feel okay. Like, this is great. Are you kidding? This is great. It's exhausting.
When I was originally on CBC, you know, I would usually come and sit before while something else was going on, like just waiting, and you would see the host just nodding and smiling. And I noticed they all did it. And I asked Steph Domet once, I'm like, is it like, do they teach you to do this radio face? And she's like, no, it's just what you do. Anyway, I do want to talk about Street Sense because you rebooted it in this online form.
Sort of. If we're probably both talking about the same place that we used to work. Mentioned in no uncertain terms that that's not a reference I should make publicly, or I shouldn't link these two entities. I'm happy to. I think it's a consumer affairs show for people in their 20s called Your Two Cents. Incidentally, we were kind of noodling on the idea of a financial literacy show for 20-somethings. It was going to be called Money in the Bank.
Cool.
And then the financial institution that we partnered with, Atlanta Credit Unions, who are awesome, don't self-identify as a bank.
Right.
So we ended up changing it to Your Two Cents, which is eerily close to that show that I used to work on years ago. But it skews a little older. We don't hardcore test products to the same degree. But man, is there ever a staggering need for financial information, especially now, because you know, people are supposed to be paying down their student loans, but also having a savings account for a down payment on a what? How does that even work for most people? And then the added layer for 20-somethings nowadays is all your friends are on the gram in Ibiza and the Greek island of Ikaria, and you're working at Giant Tiger, and you're supposed to compete. And I kind of underestimated how real that pressure is if you're in your 20s. That's a real
thing. The influencer
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was my main question is what was the difference between doing this in the 90s and doing it now in terms of the things that people are concerned about and the things that they do or don't know?
I would say the first thing is, just from a technological standpoint, Street Sense was before the internet. So people would sit through a lot of pieces that were of no relevance to them. Like, you would watch Party of Five Man Tent just to get to this week's What's Your Beef, because you had nowhere else to go. We learned very quickly when we put out the first episode with three pieces in it, people aren't going to sit through a piece about Arkells if they don't like that band.
Right.
So we're able to junk it up and send the pieces out as, you know, their own thing. And that's allowed them to travel much further. So if you have a student loan, you'll probably watch that piece. If you don't, you probably won't. So it's like everything. There are more outlets for content and people have shorter attention spans. So pieces are 3 or 4 minutes and they are snackable. I think that's the word that programmers use. So that's from the technological standpoint. From a content standpoint, we thought it would be which phone. But when we sort of polled the prospective audience, what are the things you want to know? They were like, what is a TFSA? I don't get it. What are taxes? Like, they're really starting from scratch. And, you know, I could have saved myself a lot of hassle too if I'd inherited knowledge and information from people that knew more than me. But there are simple things you can do starting out. Like, here's a great example. And you're a musician, maybe you'll love this too. A guy that works at the credit union was talking about building credit and how in high school, he bought a bass at Long and McQuaid. And though he had the money, he decided to do a payment plan instead so that when he got to university and wanted to get a credit card, he already had a credit rating.
Oh.
So he was paying his, like, whatever, $49 biweekly on this bass.
16 weeks or 16 months.
Yeah, so he owned a bass outright and he had a credit rating. So he had a credit card with a higher limit by the time he got to first year.
Wow.
That's really smart.
Truly. Cool. I mean, man, Street Sense was so important to me. Like, it was on when I was in junior high and high school. I mean, it was on beyond that as well. But yeah, it was, and I mean, we can go, people can go listen to the other podcast to hear about Street Sense, but yeah, I it was so cool to me that you resurrected, you know, the idea of it and, you know, still trying to help the youth of Canada.
Well, it never felt cool at the time. And it was kind of, as I'm sure I said on that show, the first wave of infotainment. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like walking through the halls at St. Pat's. People are like, it didn't have the same cachet that 90210 had. Like, it was on Saturday morning. It was about money. It had no commercials. It was sponsored by the Mint. And all you have to do is watch the theme song is on YouTube. Where's my money go? Like, that video shot on stage at the Palace in front of a baker's dozen of extras in 1989. It's very of a
incredible
time. But I'm proud. I'm retroactively super proud.
Let's talk about a different money-making venture, which is actually, it's a sort of a not-for-profit situation. This Film Prints T-shirt business that you've got on the go. You're a real ideas person.
I am, and they're not always great, and they don't always work. But I've kind of found, and I have to be careful even saying this out loud because I know it hasn't been everyone's experience, but maybe starting on Street Sense, I've been training my whole life for this past year. So I would actually say I've been more creative out of necessity than I have in my whole life. Like, Jeremy Taggart and I have this podcast, as I mentioned, and we got to put a record out. You know, we have 2 weeks and $2,000 or whatever it is. I'm used to making that work. So
yeah.
I've had to literally duct tape my iPad to a ladder to shoot myself in a music video for a single, like, just finding ways to get it done. So my wife opened a store at Sunnyside Mall in Bedford. She wanted to have an in-house line called Indigo Summer, named after our daughter. Mm-hmm. And she was having so much fun coming up with these designs. I was thinking, I wouldn't mind having a t-shirt line. And the designer that was working with her said, it takes swag to have the confidence to keep it really simple. Because I'm a bold, underline, size 28 font person. Film people can be kind of cool. So the idea of having this t-shirt line with, we have such unique slogans in film, and the idea that you would pass someone on the street and they'd be wearing a shirt that says two half apples or props flying in, or I'm going 10-1, and you would know what that means. It was kind of this kind of inside cool thing. So,
yes.
So I came up with the idea, made the t-shirts, tried to have the confidence to just keep it cool. They come in hip fit and grip fit. So I'm more of a grip fit person. I like the Gildan, like, sandpaper on my chest. That's fine.
Right.
But I know a lot of people like the super Euro cut hip fit. That's available too. So the challenge was coming up with, I wanted to come up with six slogans in the first six in phase one that were specific enough that people that work in film would know them, but not so specific that they would only pertain to one department, because I wanted to see how they would do. So the first six are selling really well, and $5 from every shirt goes to, which is basically the profit, goes to the AFC. They have a new program called Navigator, and they're a tool for any arts and entertainment industry worker. But the Navigator program specifically is to pair our people in need with mental health support. So it just felt pretty timely in the last year, especially like it's so layered, as you know. People can't work, that has financial pressure. Maybe you're in a small apartment with your significant other. Maybe you're learning things about yourself, but there's nowhere to go except to just sit in it. And that's a lot. That's a lot. That's layers on layers of challenge. So I was happy to hear from David Hope, who is the director of the AFC, that not happy to hear that people are calling every day, but that the exposure is really helping.
Good. By the way, can I, not to to pivot from a serious point here, but I renamed the half apple something that I think is much better, which is a crab apple box.
Oh, I like that.
It's for smaller apples.
I thought you were going to say demi pomme, like a half apple in French. There are so many films that I love.
I'm not fancy. We've established that.
Demi pomme. One of my favorite film terms is Mickey Rooney. Do you know that term?
No.
It's a short creep for the camera. Yeah, just give me a Mickey Rooney into the bar. Just means a short creep, because he was, by all accounts, not the nicest person, and he was diminutive, yeah.
Whenever I think of Mickey Rooney, I think of him being on The Simpsons saying Jiminy Jillikers.
Right.
So you're working on a show, or have you made this show, Volleys? Very funny promo I have seen.
Oh, good. So I had a meeting with this guy named Paul Gardner at Bell 5-1. And this is like people sort of have the mistaken notion that because I've been around for a while, I'm ushered right into the networks and given blank checks or indulged. I feel like I start with very little equity every time I go anywhere in Canada. It's kind of a big difference between Canada and the States. And in fact, I had a meeting with a senior programmer at CBC a few weeks ago who was very clear in saying that I am very much part of CBC's past, not at all part of its present, nor its future. Which, in a it's actually a huge gift, because I didn't understand where the chafing came from. I'm pitching ideas that I think are great, and they're just not going anywhere. It's like, oh, you don't like me. Perfect. Well, at least now I know that. So you go where there's passion. So I was having a meeting with this guy, Paul Gardner, Bell 5-1, pitching a few ideas. And he said, yeah. What is the idea that gives you oxygen? Like what gets you excited? And the first idea that popped into my head was this idea about volunteer firefighters that I've had kicking around for a while. And it was sort of born out of a happiness exercise, which I'm even rolling my own eyes at. But there's a proud tradition in this part of the world to think about what we don't have, or what would be nice, or that must be nice kind of mentality. So I was thinking, what do I have? My wife has an awesome bike. I have a lobster costume. I have a 1972 Ford truck. My father-in-law has this little warehouse building he's not using. So I started to cobble together all the things I do have and came up with this idea of Volleys. Developed it with my friend Sarah McCarthy, who grew up in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, across the street from the volunteer fire department, and her house burnt down when she was 9. So she had some real life experience with the Volleys. And in fact, in Liverpool, apparently, there was a curfew for teens that was generated by the Volleys at the fire hall. Like the siren went off, that's when it was time to go home. And every Sunday, there was a teen dance with DJ Backdraft. So Paul's thing is pretty much, I don't have a huge amount of dough, but why don't you make the thing you love, and then you retain ownership of it and can shop it around. He needs programming. Wow. I need to get my thing made. So I've actually been having quite a bit of fun and success making things that I'm excited about and just cutting the networks out of it. So kind of because technology is so affordable, you can bankroll a little pilot for something and shop it around. And the thing that I keep coming back to is I kind of learned this lesson the most on Trailer Park Boys. It like more money does not equal more funny. If the words are good and the performances are good, that's usually enough.
Yeah.
But the network route, as you know, so many notes, so many cooks, such adversity to risk. You just don't end up making the thing that you wanted. So Volleys isn't the prettiest thing, but it's what I meant. And that's pretty rare.
And what is the plan? When can we see it?
It'll be on Bell in September. We did 6 10-minute episodes, and I kind of cobbled together a group of people I've crossed paths with over the years who struck me as funny, but they're largely non-actors. And the real currency for me is time. So I tried to do myself a favor by keeping it all in the station. So I can't afford a barn fire or a cow in a river. But if we're going to be in the station, what I can buy myself is more time to really work on jokes and do multiple takes and improv stuff and try different things. So I tried to avoid all the things that we sometimes fall victim to in our business, like cranes and flying in a sort of name and things that ultimately don't really make the difference for me. I also like to have a small crew, everyone making their best day rate, but no fat. So there's no, I'm going to run to the truck to get it. There's no, we're moving across town because you lose 2 hours that way. Like everyone, all hands on deck. I love that because then I feel like everyone is closer to the nucleus. They're more invested in the outcome. They have more pride in the product. Best idea wins. I love that approach.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of best idea wins, and that does not mean that my idea is the best and therefore will win. I do think it's like collaboration is key, especially, you know, when you don't have a lot of resources, it's like everyone needs to be on board and, you know, thinking with their top hat on.
Exactly. I love, though, that people in specific departments, Nicole Frost, for example, is our art designer and Michael Pearson is our props person. I mean, those titles don't do justice to what they pulled off. But if you think this is good and funny and you're happy with that, it's fine with me. And I love when you give people the freedom and confidence to just go with it. Because they always want to show up doing their best work. And that's the challenge in a collaborative environment. It has to be best idea wins. There are 100 ways to core an apple. And ultimately, someone has to say, okay, well, in this particular case, this is how we're doing it. So I like to say, throw it out. And if I don't take it, no harm. Bros before shows. That and, would be a good t-shirt slogan. Bros before shows.
Write it down. Patent pending. And how has your time been making stuff in COVID?
Generally speaking, I've been incredibly thankful that I have a few things on the go. Because if I was trying to act to feed my family this past year, that wouldn't have been great. So I was thankful that I had a few steady things when the world was so rocky.
For sure. And I mean, I've only had COVID set experience, so I don't really have anything to compare it to, but you know.
Well, tell me about that, because the wall started to kind of go up in flames around the last couple of days of our volley shoot, but everyone got tested and, you know, did the best they could. It's not a perfect system, right?
It's not. And we got very lucky. We were supposed to start shooting on April 9th, and we had to move up 3 weeks because of all the things in town.
Okay, when you say up, do you mean later or do you mean sooner?
Or sooner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we started March 18th.
Oh, wow.
And we ended the day before we would have started, April 8th. And we got so lucky because if this production had been shut down by COVID, the movie never would have been finished.
Right.
I would have like tried to cobble some sort of awful length short out of what we had.
So this was you and Nicole, right?
Yeah. Nicole Steves.
And did she direct it? You wrote it and she directed it?
I directed it. She produced.
Oh, wow. And who wrote it? The two of you wrote it together?
I wrote it as well. Yeah.
So how did you approach that? Did you have a game plan and then just kind of massage it when you needed to, or?
I developed it through AFCOOP. So I turned 40. You know this story. I turned 40 and I was like, hey, man, half your life's over. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I had left the coast and I was like, okay, so we're going to do some things that we want to do now. And AFCOOP had this workshop called Writing Small. And it was specifically to develop screenplays with the aim to apply to Talent to Watch, the telephone program. So I did that. I just developed this. I've written scripts before, but I've never written an outline in my life. Like I've written a million art stories, no outline. I just didn't do it. But this is the way that we did it. So when the writing came, it was quite easy. And then I couldn't find a producer because everyone was applying with their own things. So I put it on Instagram. This is like sort of a Halifax story.
I did.
I put it on Instagram. I was like, does anyone want to produce a movie? Like, who wants to? It sucks. Like, let's be clear. Producing, not fun. So Nicole and I, who only knew each other as acquaintances, we weren't friends. She's like, I'm in a weird position where I have this production company. I make a lot of stuff, but I made a $25,000 feature and I made a $1,000 feature and I am fucked for funding streams. So let's do this. And we sort of like went into it not knowing each other.
Interesting.
And it turned out really, really great. Like our relationship is terrific. And I was like, I'm working on a new script. I'm scared to ask you if you want to produce it. And she's like, yeah, let's do it.
It's interesting. I had no idea how you two became in cahoots. But
Instagram.
Wow, that's crazy. I love it. I love that spirit.
It's quite ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure you find Halifax, like, I mean, you probably know way more people than me, but there's a ton of people like, you know, and then there's some people you've just never crossed paths with for whatever reason. And that was Nicole Steves and I.
I don't cross paths with anyone.
Well, not out in Truro.
No, I'm very insular. Like once a year at Wentworth when you can take the chairlift up to the top and then walk down in the fall leaves. Like that's when I see people. I see people there. But that's about it. Like I don't go out. I mean, not even because of the COVID, but I don't really go out. I don't spend much time in Halifax. I guess these days sometimes we're at Sunnyside Mall in Bedford. I like the wedge pizza, but I don't see people anywhere. But that's what people underestimated, like not to rehash the taxident of 2015, but that was why it was such a big deal to our community, because this tax credit allowed the big shows to come here, train our people who could then use those skills to make their own stuff. The myth was that they were coming in, swooping in, taking the money and leaving. The truth is they were coming in, paying our people, training them in jobs on high-end things, and they could then use those skills to tell our indie stories.
And now look what's happened. There's a labor shortage.
I know.
It's like...
I know, but
who would have thunk it?
If I moved to Toronto in 2015 because there was no work here and I sort of worked my way up in the union and I kind of had a stable thing going, I would be a little reluctant to come back, even though that's what we're asking people to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gangbusters and it's wide open. And the great thing about some of these big series is that they have multiple season commitments. So hopefully it's good times for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I also hope to see Bill Pullman at Stillwell, or where is he in the center? I don't even know. It's so funny because everyone's like, we can't talk about the shows. It's like, but everyone knows which shows they are.
Exactly. Everyone knows. I always get Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton mixed up. Paxton must have been here for Titanic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And he died. So
Pullman is here and he's in Lunenburg.
And in Independence Day.
I haven't seen The Sinner. But
no, either.
We've been watching The Kominsky Method. Have you seen it?
I have not. That's Michael Douglas, correct?
It's Michael Douglas, but more so it's Alan Arkin. Michael Douglas is actually pretty great as an actor. But Alan Arkin is a adorable. And I can't even picture him as anything other than an octogenarian. Like, was he like ever cranky in movies when he was like 40?
I don't know.
He must have been.
Yeah, he must have been. Alan Arkin has a place in Cape Breton.
No.
He does. You know how I know this? Oh, I can't tell you on the air. Well, I'll tell you off the air how.
Why?
Yeah, because that's
so intriguing.
Like, there's like that weird cabal of rich people up there. Yeah, like Philip Glass and stuff.
Like Bailey from WKRP? Jan Smithers? She had a place in Cape Breton, right? And Louis Del Grande from Seeing Things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of Hollywood people, I've never seen you talk about this, so maybe you don't want to, but I'm interested. Like, you went out to LA.
Yes.
And you like tried to do the damn thing in LA.
I did. I turned 30. Yep. I was at CBC. I'd done my fifth season of Jonavision. The network wanted a sixth season. I wanted to do the same show just after The National, because all the people who started watching me on Street Sense were now like me, 30. So I didn't want to, come up with a brand new show or lose the audience we had. I just wanted to do it later. And there was a feeling internally there that I had not proven I could hold an audience by myself. So I was kind of left with no other, like, turned 30, I'd been on TV 15 years here, and it was just time. So out of self-imposed exile, not really knowing what to do, I went down there. I had so many preconceived notions, most of them from the montage in Pretty Woman where Richard Gere's driving around the block in Beverly Hills. That's what I thought it was. What I didn't anticipate is that all the people who, like me, were curious enough or interested enough or creative enough, adventurous enough, they were all there too. So I met my people. I was kind of like my university in a way. And the work came. I wish someone had told me in hindsight, you'll sit around for at least a year because it just takes that long to get your ducks in a row. I kind of had this notion that there's an open door policy for Canadians that have a decent demo reel. It's not really that way. But I liked it more than I thought I would. The climate was nice. People were nice. And then the work eventually came, but it wasn't home.
Right.
Yeah. I concluded ultimately, I think it's just math. If you can wait it out, first of all, you have to figure out what drives you. It never, American celebrity never drove me. So I didn't want it bad enough to sleep on a friend's couch to get an under five on Moesha. That wasn't what I was doing there.
Yeah.
The big thing that I brought home, I've been doing Zooms with school classes, including East Hants Regional High.
Rural High. And he wishes it was regional.
The big thing that I came home from LA with was self-confidence, because I went there very self-deprecating and would be auditioning and apologizing in the middle of it, like, well, sorry, I'm almost done. Stinking up the room. And Americans are like, what are you doing?
Right.
As you know, here, we make fun of ourselves as a defense mechanism, and it's woven into the fabric of our people. Americans don't have that gene. So it really chafes for them. And so, I feel like we equate self-confidence and arrogance, and Americans don't. They just see it as being confident in yourself. So I was a traveling salesperson trying to sell myself, and at the same time saying, I wouldn't buy this if I were you. So I came back with a new outlook on what it means to be confident, and that you might as well back the one pony you know can perform.
Right. The one pony in your stable, really.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you go down for like a pilot season? Did you try that whole thing, or did you just sort of pick up and go?
I did, but I found in Canada, I can be sitcom guy and a host, and I'm not a stand-up, but I have done some sketch. I can kind of do a little bit of everything, and not only can I, you kind of have to. And there they want to know specifically, are you a primetime reality show host, or are you a hidden camera comedian on Comedy Central? Because you can't be both.
Right.
So I found I slipped through the cracks a lot there. There are a lots of really good looking jack dudes in deep V-neck t-shirts. And I mean, it's funny, you know. Okay, you guys will read for the hunk. Jonathan, we'll get you to read for the perv, the new neighbor, the weird guy working in the store in the main floor of the office building, like all the niche roles, which is kind of where the fun is. But I wasn't anything enough. I wasn't good enough, wasn't funny enough, wasn't handsome enough. And I was kind of fine with it. My big deal there was the Joe Schmo Show, which was a fake reality show written by the guys who went on to do, what's the Ryan Reynolds thing where he's in the costume? Deadpool.
Yes.
Yeah, Reese and Paul Wernick.
Yeah, I like the Deadpool movies. I'm not a big superhero person generally, but I like Deadpool because it's sort of alternative. It's like rock and roll superhero.
Well, they were so far ahead of their time because this thing, Joe Schmo was the first season. I was a huge fan of it. It was the first fake reality show. And so the premise is everyone's an actor except for one person who doesn't know. And Kristen Wiig was actually in the first season of the show playing a psychologist. And so far ahead of its time, it was on Spike TV. And in the last episode of the first season, it was a triumph of humanity over tomfoolery, because when the balloon drop happened and there was this big confession, like, guess what? This whole thing's a joke and here's a giant check. The guy who was a lovely guy named Matt Kennedy Gould was like, well, I'm sorry if I misled you guys in any way. Like, just the sweetest, kindest dude. In our season of the show, it was more a parody of The Bachelor. So everyone's an actor playing a stereotype except for this one real guy who was maybe a bit of a racist, maybe a tiny bit of a homophobe, a kind of a misogynist. And what no one see coming is that he actually fell for our bachelorette, in quotes, pretty hard.
Oh.
So during the big reveal, when he's saying, she's saying, guess what? This whole thing's a joke. He was devastated. And all I heard in the silence was an assistant director saying to their walkie, hold the balloon drop. Because there's supposed to be this big, like, it's a joke. Get it? Your whole life's a joke. He did not take it that way.
Oh, my goodness.
But as a student of the craft, you would love this. The show that they did after Joe Schmo was called Invasion Iowa, where they took William Shatner with an entourage of actors, or actors playing his entourage, to a small town in Iowa that was allegedly the birthplace of James T. Kirk. And William Shatner produced a movie in this town, but it was a fake movie. And he sold merchandise, which were shats. They were like beanies that they called shats. And everyone in the town bought shats and was wearing them around proudly. Like they punked an entire town before punked was even a thing. That was Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick too.
Wow. William Shatner is so rich.
He really is.
It's
Do you
ridiculous.
Mean as a character or money?
I guess both, but I meant money. Yeah. What's your favorite? You've been in a ton of stuff and like for long swaths of time, you know. What's been your favorite working experience?
Well, the right answer probably is Volley's, because as a freelancer, it's the most recent one. And
excluding current projects.
Thank you very next, as they say. The Joe Schmo Show was way up there because it was so high concept, and my character's name was Gerald with a hard G. And the first thing I had to do as an actor was remember to turn around when our mark said, so Gerald. That was a pretty intense challenge. But I would say close second is probably Letterkenny, because it has the spirit of Trailer Park in the early days when it felt special. Yeah. Clapberg had a way of standing off the rough edges with kitten close-ups and silliness.
Cool. Casting was a big hurdle for me because I largely just felt bad. And because you're like 97% not giving someone a job.
Yeah.
And I thought, why would you choose this as a vocation? And I say that as someone who loves actors, and I wanted to make a movie so I could work with actors. But I just go, what a life you have chosen.
Well, I've had a real struggle with how to answer the question, so what do you do, Jonathan? Because I've never self-identified as an actor, and it's out of respect for the craft and feeling like I'm not worthy of calling myself one. But it took working on the other side of the table to realize, contrary to what we think in our heads, as a director or producer, when people come in, you want them to be awesome. You don't want them to suck. And there's a certain freedom that comes with knowing there's a good chance, like if you've cast my sister and she's Hispanic, I'm not going to get it. Doesn't matter how good I am. Yeah. And maybe you've already offered it to someone playing my part, but I can't tell you how many times someone's come in and been wonderful. And I've thought they're not right for this, but I'm going to write something or create something for them. So that once you sort of accept that the odds of not getting it are so much greater than getting it, it really frees you up to go for it. Well, the weird mindset that comes early on is when I was in LA, for example, I was such a terrible auditioner that my manager thought I should get a commercial agent, not to book commercials, but to just kind of build a thicker skin and get used to auditioning a few times a week and trying to win people over. And I'm kind of a slow burn. I'm a good guest at dinner parties. Like by the end of the night, you'll probably go say that guy wasn't too bad, but I don't wow you in the first 30 seconds, which when you're drinking a Diet Sprite next to 11 other people, with tighter, better fitting t-shirts and turning to the camera and beaming, like it's so not my thing. But learning what you're not good at is an often overlooked important part of the journey to figure out what you are good at. So I just don't take it seriously anymore. My challenge as an actor is like acting is probably the thing that I enjoy least about the job. And the idea of like playing the guy that the main character runs into at the tire place, like that doesn't get my heart rate up at all. I like playing characters I've never played before, working with people I've always wanted to work with, or being virtually unrecognizable, which is getting harder because I've ticked off quite a few of the different facial hair and glasses and wig boxes. So for this character in Volley's, he is Wade from the county. And I thought, Wade spends his time in the ditch picking up garbage. Sun is having its way with him. So I got my hair bleached with a cap, which is apparently how they used to do it in the 80s and 90s.
Wow.
Got a like spray tan lines, short shorts. He's kind of Steve Irwin meets Thomas Hayden Church meets the landscaper from Masters of Flip. I don't know if you've ever seen that show, but there's a sort of Zen Bushman named Jeff, who's a little bit flirty and super confident. It's funny where you draw inspiration from.
Truly.
So having never written something with like an outline, and that's the thing I have the least patience for, kind of the math of story. I know you have to do it, and I know it's the foundation, so it has to hold the rest of your story up. Now that you've written something that way, are you into it?
It was easier, but I also felt like because I was within this workshop framework and I had, you know, the shame of not getting it done, I had to do it. But I also had to do it like a month at a time. If I was working on my own, I don't know.
Nothing like a deadline. Work expands or contracts to the time allotted for it. And as you know, having built a career on deadlines, if it had to be done by tomorrow at 4, it would be.
Yep.
And if you have 7 weeks, somehow that's what it'll take.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people work all different kinds of ways. And the thing about the outline is this idea that I had, which is about a lady vigilante who beats up abusive men at night. That's the highest concept idea I'm ever going to have. Unlike you, I am not a high concept idea person. I just want to see people in a room talking. You don't really need to outline that. You know what I mean?
But so this had actual like action plots. Sequences.
It did. Yeah. We had a stunt coordinator.
Wow.
It was intense.
Because that's the stuff that can take time, right?
It can. And I was also terrified the actor was going to get hurt. Not that we were putting her in a position to get hurt, but just that if she did, the movie would be dead.
Then what?
Like, right? There were so many ways to ruin the movie.
So was there anything, I mean, you can always fall back on people didn't know what the plan was. So if the plan had to change, as long as you don't kind of show your hand, no one's any the wiser. Was there anything you had to concede that you really had your heart set on?
Yeah, I had to change my entire ending.
Time? Like ran out of time, ran out of money?
Resources. Basically, I wanted the movie to, and I'm not going to tell you how it ends, but I wanted it to be a revolution of women. So it's like she comes out onto the street and the street is full of women because now all of the women are like taking back the night. Or
whatever. And then it's like you can have two women and half a chicken salad sandwich.
Yeah, basically, Nicole and I had this conversation halfway through shooting. I'm like, can we talk about the revolution? She's like, yeah, we've got all five actors coming in. I'm like, yeah, but like, what about the 30 extras I want? And she's like, oh no.
Can't have that. Can't have it. No. This was something I didn't consider in a show about firefighters. I needed a truck.
Right.
I had to buy a fire truck. It's hard to do a show about firefighters. I had a lot of things that I could find, and a lot of things were donated and things like that. But you can't do a show about firefighters without a truck. That was our big ticket item. So I ended up buying
it. So now you own a firefighters
museum. Yeah, $6,500.
Wow.
By the way, did you say at night? So was it all night shoot?
The attack stuff is all night shoots. Yeah. Yeah. But there's a love story as well. That happens some in the daytime.
So what happens next?
But yeah, so we're editing and we're aiming for some festival dates in the fall for next year, and we'll see what happens.
Isn't that exciting?
Now it's so exciting.
Everything else is gravy. You did it.
Yeah.
You did this thing that you always wanted to do that you were putting off for whatever reason, or you weren't ready, and now you are.
Yeah.
Amen. Everything else is like a nice bonus.
Truly. Yeah. This was such a nice chat.
Super.
I feel
nice.
Like we're hitting the hour mark. That's where I've learned. That's where people tap out.
The people you're talking to.
No,
I'm just going to leave a mid sentence.
Just sleeping.
I'm working on an Audible podcast for kids, and learned that Audible wants things to be 21 minutes because that's how long people stay on the treadmill.
Wow.
So this is a two-parter. You didn't even know it.
Also the length of a sitcom.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Wow. That makes sense to me because people watch Seinfeld or whatever at the gym.
Right. Actually surprises me people can concentrate that long. Well, I'm happy for you. I'm really happy for you that you got your movie made. It's a really hard thing to do. And especially at this particular juncture, that's a big deal. And on the days when it's hard and you're limping towards the finish line, take a moment to be proud of yourself.
Oh, thank you. It's so funny. Everyone, I was like, Jonathan's on my show. They're like, he's so nice. I'm like, he really is, and he doesn't have to be. At this point, you don't.
Well.
But we appreciate that you are.
That's nice of you to say. See, I feel like you, I'm uncomfortable being given a compliment, so I don't know what to say right now.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to say we're going to check out Volley's on Bell in September.
Yes.
And filmprints.ca, get your t-shirts.
Yes.
And isn't, are you going to do more sayings?
Yes, I am. I have like three phases. So the next phase is like specific to departments, like sound is speeding and fix it in post, those kinds of things. But I've been getting lots of great suggestions from people. So hopefully it'll be something that can kind of go for a while.
I also like the idea that you can collect each phase.
Exactly. And I debated, I'm not really wired to think this way, but I debated beforehand, should I say this is phase one? Or then will people be, you know what, I'm going to sit on my wallet till phase two comes out just to see. So I caught myself before saying this is phase one. I just said, here they are, limited edition.
In the UK? What do they say in the UK? Series one?
It's series one.
They
mean
season, but they say series. Yeah.
But like all series in the UK, you need to know when it's over. So if they stop flying off the shelf, I'll just pull the chute. Because I think the economics don't really work. I think it costs me more to make the shirts. And I should have just given the money that I used to make the shirts to AFC. That would have been better for them anyway. But it's been fun.
That's awesome. And I hope by the time this airs that we're climbing out of this stuff and reopening, and maybe you'll get to the city someday, or I'll see you at the ECMAs again or something.
I would love that. It's good to talk to you, and thanks for asking.
Tideline is engineered by Palmer Jameson at the Golden Palm and produced by the Halifax Examiner.